Welcome to episode 34 of the Walk and Talk podcast. I'm Greg Johnson, and today is Thursday, August 13th, 2020. The topic for this episode is going to be disaster preparedness, and the reason I am wanting to share these ideas right now is because they're fresh on my mind and probably of interest to others in our area. We just had the derecho storm go through Iowa and other areas in the Midwest, but specifically for Iowa City and to the north of us, Cedar Rapids, there are still tens of thousands of people without power and without internet. They may have their smartphones, they may be on Facebook, so hopefully I can reach some folks with this information through the podcast. So two things I want to cover. One would be kind of immediate ideas and suggestions for people who are currently in need, and I'll try to share that in the first few minutes of this episode. And then for the rest of the episode, I'll be talking about what our experience had been with the storm and some of the disaster preparedness resources we were able to use to help things go a little more smoothly. So I know from speaking with folks who are in the Cedar Rapids area, there are many who do not have electricity or internet. And in Iowa City, we also still have people without electricity and without internet. I think a lot of people are independently just finding creative solutions to make things work. They're charging their phones in their cars and, you know, driving to where they can find areas of town where there's electricity and charging up or working. If you're in the Iowa City area and are affiliated with the University of Iowa, you might consider going to some public campus area where the university's public Wi-Fi is available. If you really need to, you know, have your laptop plugged in and get some work done, there may be some opportunities to do that. Even if buildings are closed, you may be able to, you know, find an active outlet you can use for charging or have your devices in your car. But anyway, so for internet solutions, there are some public Wi-Fi spots, certainly places like Starbucks or, you know, other coffee shops, restaurants, businesses that have public Wi-Fi. That might be an option for people that really need to get online. And I think that with cell phones, people have been maybe using those and realizing they're running out of power and not having a place to charge up. So that can be an issue. Also, in our area, we have restaurants and some hotels that are open. There were people posting online that they urgently needed assistance with somebody to repair their generator, or they needed to buy a generator because they had some medical equipment or oxygen or something like that that they really needed. So kind of life-threatening situations. And so they just had to get a generator. Now, every store that I'm familiar with in the Iowa City area sold out of generators within hours of the storm going through. And so it probably won't be possible to purchase a generator in the area. But you can still get generators online and have them shipped. If there is going to be an extended outage in your area, you might be able to get a generator in a day or two and have something to run on. But the cost of a generator can be pretty expensive. They're noisy, they're smelly, they do require gasoline or LP gas. And so if somebody just needs power for a few days and they do have health concerns, you certainly, you know, want to be in touch with a medical, you know, doctor or somebody to make sure you're making the right choices and not putting yourself at risk. But one consideration would be a hotel room that might be $60 or $70 is going to cost less than a generator that might cost, you know, several hundred dollars or even thousands of dollars if you're trying to find one to run the capacity of your entire home. What happens is in any time there's like an emergency and there's a lot of stress, sometimes we start thinking more narrowly and then, you know, making decisions like trying to fix a generator rather than considering just getting a hotel room. But now, being Thursday, the storm recovery is underway. Many areas now are back with power. The day of the storm, most of the grocery stores lost their cold foods. And some of that was due to power outages, but some of it was due to damage of equipment outside. So the winds came and damaged the cooling units that run the refrigerator and freezer sections. So if you were wondering about that, why would a grocery store have lights on? They didn't have electric interruption, but they lost all of their perishable cold and frozen items. That's why some of the grocery stores quickly arranged to have freezer trucks come for, I presume, rented or borrowed or something. And so they were able to have employees take frozen food and refrigerated food quickly to refrigerated vehicles outside. But for the first day, most places just didn't have internet and didn't have power. And power was restored within less than 24 hours for some areas. So like 2 a.m. roughly following the day of the storm, power was starting to come back on for some residents, and then within 24 hours, many more. Then for people who were the day after the storm without internet, you may have been using your cell phone as a hotspot or Wi-Fi from a neighboring building that might have another service provider. But CenturyLink and Mediacom were out in most places. So there would have been the first day without power. On the second day, probably power, but no internet. And then internet services were restored yesterday morning, Wednesday morning, for many people. And so now Thursday is kind of the first day people are waking up with electric and internet and trying to get back to normal. That's one group of people. There's another group of people for whom, you know, power lines went down, trees damaged homes. There's no simple switch you can flip and suddenly you're going to have electric or internet. And so those people are either making do without and trying to go charge their devices somewhere and going to restaurants to get food. There are a lot of aspects of the storm damage and impact that go sort of unnoticed. I was just in a conversation a few minutes ago with somebody who is taking care of the railroad lines in our area. The railroad crossings, the lights and the gates that lift, those are powered when there is no electricity. They are powered by batteries that are maintained, presumably with like a trickle charge or something, so that they're always ready in the event of a power outage. That can run for maybe 4 hours, 12 hours, but it's not going to go for several days. And there still is no power to many of these control boxes for railroad crossings. So even though these are being looked into and there are people trying to repair that, you'll want to use some caution when you're approaching railroad crossings. What the train conductors, engineers are supposed to do is stop the train, put out flags, and make sure that proper precautions are taken when going through any intersection. It costs, I'm told, about $500 each time the train has to stop because of presumably the extra fuel that's used to kind of get it started up again. But even in a short distance, there are maybe 10 stops that the train would have to make. So there's, you know, $5,000 extra in train operation. That comes from an unnamed source because I didn't get the guy's name. But anyway, so there are going to be still quite a few outages, even though if you're driving around, it may look like things are kind of back to normal in some areas. Keep in mind, there can still be some hazards that are not obvious and visible. So for people in our area, I have seen some questions posted on Facebook about where they can get fuel. You know, if you were low on gas and now suddenly many of the gas stations are closed, you're going to be a little concerned about how you're going to get your car filled up. And that's going to be specific to your area. And unfortunately, on an empty tank, driving around trying to find an open gas station can be a little stressful. But I have encouraged people to post online news about outages or restorations of electricity and status of what grocery stores are open and available. It seems like social media is a way to communicate those things out. In Iowa City, there's less of an issue right now because we're a couple of days into the recovery process, but Coralville, in the area west of, there's Copyworks and Monica's restaurant, the area west of there, if you drove by, even on the day of the storm, you would have noticed that power continued to that area. And so the grocery stores in that area, Pioneer, New Pioneer Co-op, Hy-Vee, they would have had electricity. I was told, however, that Hy-Vee did lose their coolers, so that may take some time to replenish some of the colder items. I was told by somebody at Hy-Vee that even though the Coralville location lost some of their perishables, that the Iowa City waterfront store was still having milk and eggs and other, you know, some of these cool cold perishables were still in stock and available. Apparently they didn't lose power or they had a backup generator or something. So if you're still kind of not informed about where to get food, you might try the waterfront Hy-Vee. There's also on the west side of town a Fairway store on Mormon Trek, and they had power throughout the storm and did not lose any perishable items. So at this point, we can assume that delivery trucks are coming into town and replenishing supplies, but there may be some outages. So that's a little update, as much as I know, about what was going on. I can tell you that if you go to the Mid-American Energy website, there's a page on their website that shows you how many people are without power. And it covers main cities in Iowa. And you can go down to every town, you can go down to the level of each county and see who's without electric. So that's a way to kind of get details about the impact. And then, even though obviously everybody knows that there's been a storm and there's, you know, tens of thousands of people without electricity, you'll still want to report, if you can do so, report using your phone or some computer connected to the internet. You'll want to report that you don't have power. There must be, I'm sure, a lot of people not reporting in just because they assume it's been reported. Or how do you report that you don't have any electric? It's like the phone company saying, you know, if your phone doesn't work, give us a call and let us know. So anyway, if you can use your smartphone, go to the Mid-American Energy website and report your outage. When you enter in the phone number of your account, they will automatically bring up your address. They'll know, you know, your account information, and you can report it. So then it's added to their map and their data, and they can be more mindful. And it's likely that, you know, if there's a large number of people impacted by a certain outage, they're going to put a priority on that. So that's another thing to keep in mind. When you're on their website, you can see for a particular city how many areas are impacted. And I presume the numbers are reflecting an outage, like let's say a down transformer, and then the people impacted by that outage. So if you haven't reported, then they won't know that needs to be fixed, perhaps. There are some automated reporting systems within the network, within the power grid, so that they know when equipment goes out, where it is, what needs to be replaced. There's some of that, but the reporting from people, from their businesses and homes, public reporting in, that really does help. Okay, so now I want to share a little bit about the storm and our experience. Maybe there'll be something there that can help other people in dealing with the current recovery or in planning ahead for the next disaster that hits. So it was Monday, August 10th, 2020, just a few days ago, when everything seemed fine, blue skies, it was a nice day. I had some tech client support calls in the morning, and then we went out to get some groceries and run some errands around noon. And I did check the AccuWeather app, which tends to be fairly accurate. It said that it was going to start raining in about 20 minutes. So we thought, well, we have, you know, time to run to the store and then come home. And there was some alert, like there are often these alerts that say, you know, there's going to be a thunderstorm coming, but nothing, you know, unusual. The sirens often go off when, of course, when there are tornadoes sighted, but there are also sirens that go off if there's a bad storm, a thunderstorm going through somewhere in the county. It might not even come through our neighborhood. So we do try to be pretty responsible and attentive to what's coming across the weather notification, but try to measure that by, you know, looking at the radar and figuring things out from there. Anyway, went to the store on our way back. It was about a quarter after 12, and the storm clouds started coming in, started getting a little windy, and suddenly the lights, the electric went out for the traffic lights, and then sticks and debris started hitting our vehicle. There was a person on a moped in front of us riding this scooter in these like 80 mile an hour winds. I don't know how they were able to do that, but we were nervous about, you know, what if they spill or fall off their motorbike. So we were carefully following them. But yeah, this storm came in really, really fast. It was not a slow increasing thing. It was just suddenly it hit us. So we rushed home, and at that point, the power was out on the west side of Iowa City. So just in the few minutes driving home, we went from, oh, it looks like it might rain, to 100 mile an hour winds and power out, which meant that we were unable to get our car inside because of this parking area where we would be parking normally is underground. And eventually we were able to get inside to get the vehicle in, but it was at that point, you know, like a hurricane, basically, a little bit nerve-wracking. And we got inside. There have been lots of storms where maybe there are like 30, 50 mile an hour winds. So, you know, we're used to having these kind of storms go through, but this one was even more intense. So we were kind of watching things out the window. We're in an area where there are trees, but there are no trees close to our home. So we would see things at a distance, but no branches or anything large enough to do any damage. And we felt it was safe to kind of look out and see what was going on. But yeah, super serious storm. And it went through, I would say, pretty quickly. Again, watching the AccuWeather app, it was telling us that it would be about, you know, 40 minutes. So now I want to get to some of the kind of management tools that we used during this crisis and how everything kind of fit together. As we got home, being without power, there were some emergency lights in the hallway that flipped on when the power goes out. Those turn on, so that was helpful to navigate. And we have some uninterruptible power supplies for the computers and for other electronics. And that's really helpful in a time when there's going to be a short outage, 10 minutes, 20 minutes, maybe an hour. You know, if you're running some small devices on these battery backup systems, they might even go for a couple of hours. And that's something that's useful to have anytime. Even if you don't expect a hurricane to go through the Midwest, or a tornado, or, you know, lightning strikes that knocks the power out, those things don't happen very often. And so some people think, well, do I really need battery backup? But, you know, it's helpful, because if you have a desktop computer running and it abruptly loses power, whatever files were being written to the hard drive or whatever system updates were being done could get corrupted. It could lead to data loss or needing to pay somebody money to fix your computer. So if you have a battery backup system, it just helps to ensure that you don't have an interruption. And, you know, keep in mind, there can also be just a circuit can go, or there are a number of other things. These battery backup units are available at Staples and Best Buy, you know, typical big box stores. There are some that have a poor quality sine wave that costs maybe, well, you can start at sort of $60. The question is, how much power do you want to be available to what size devices, and what quality of power do you want? So there are these little units that look kind of like a power strip, and those could run, you know, like a little LED light, or they would be useful for charging up your phones. Those might operate for 40 minutes or an hour with that kind of load. Then there are other units that cost maybe $100 to $150 that do offer power. It's not really a pure sine wave, and what that means is the power is just not quite as clean and precise as might be needed for some devices. If it's a less intelligent, less programmed device, like a light, let's say, a desk lamp or a paper shredder or something like that, those devices are not going to need this pure sine wave. But if you have a computer, you may want to use a nicer power supply for that, and those can cost a couple hundred dollars. And they can also help when there are power surges, power drops, brownouts, blackouts, you know, all these different things that can happen. It's helpful, and it can help you avoid having strain on your hardware over time that would result in a early demise of your computer. You would want to know a little bit about how much wattage your devices are using. So, you know, a laptop computer might be 100 watts, but just kind of become familiar with that, how much your TV might be using, or a refrigerator might use 100 watts to 200 watts. The way to think about it that's familiar to some people would be old light bulbs used to be like a 60-watt light bulb or a 100-watt light bulb. Those have been replaced by, CFLs and now LED lights, but if it's an LED light, it might just be 10 watts instead of 100 watts. But go ahead and do a little bit of an inventory, figure out if the power went out, what devices would you like to be using for 40 minutes to 2 hours, and how much power do they need, and then buy your battery backups accordingly. The battery backups can get expensive if you're going to get, you know, 10 of them, so now you're up to $2,000 in these little battery backup units, and you only get power for maybe an hour or two, depending on the load. That's pretty expensive. So if you're looking at buying 10 of those units, which I don't think people would do that, but if you were, you might consider getting a generator instead. because if the power is going to be out for an extended period of time, like it was with this storm, relying on some battery backup units isn't going to help. So with our situation, we don't have a generator. Our power over the last 10 years has been pretty reliable. We actually have power from multiple sources. So normally if one source goes down, the other one's available. This was very unusual to be completely without power. And so, but having a generator actually might be useful. It's sort of like having jumper cables. You might need them for yourself. You might need them to help somebody else. It's good to have if you're one of those people that likes to help others. So a generator can cost a nice, reliable, quiet, portable generator might be $1,000. And that would be convenient to have because it's smaller in size and quiet. There are other generators that could be less money, might be $700 or $500, that are going to be super noisy. They're going to sound like a lawnmower running, but they're going to put out a lot of electricity. You get a lot of power for the money. And if you're in a rural area or if it's an emergency and you need to have that power, you could use one of those noisy units. But if you are in a residential area, that's going to keep people awake at night. So if you're trying to keep something like a refrigerator going, you're going to want a quiet generator. And these are big ticket items. So if storms go through once every 10 years, you might decide to just take your chances. If there's an extended outage, just buy more food when the power comes back on and restock your refrigerator. But for us, we got home, we were able to use power for a little while. We made sure that we plugged in our phones and charged up our devices using the battery backup units. We had a little, you know, a narrow window of time to do that. You'll want to, if you're into this kind of thing and you're going to buy one of these battery backup units, the ones that cost about $150 to $200 will have a readout on the front. It's very helpful. It tells you how much power you're using. It gives you an estimate of how long you can continue working based on the current load. So, for example, I have one computer where there are two displays, and I don't need both displays. I use them and they're helpful, but if I had to, I could drop back down to just using one display in an emergency. So I would look at the power utilization and time available on that battery backup, then turn off this big display, and that would give me more time. So you can turn off some of your devices or selectively plug in devices based on what your needs are, but you're not going to get 5 hours, 10 hours of use. For that, you'd have to have a bunch of deep cycle batteries or lithium ion, expensive lithium ion batteries to run appliances and things. And that can cost, say, $1,000 to $2,000 for really nice batteries that have a lot of capacity. And we don't have that because, again, we don't have hurricanes going through Iowa very frequently. Maybe every 5 years there's some sort of flooding or tornado or something that's creating disruptions. But we've just not needed the extended power of batteries or generators. But I'll talk about that in a little bit. So Monday the 10th, power goes out around 20 minutes after 12. Some areas, Coralville, west side of Iowa City, some areas still had power throughout the broader outage. And we were able to use our phones for email and internet, although at that point, everybody in the whole area was using their phones for email and internet, and so the speed was really, really slow. This is the same phenomenon that happens when there's a big football game and you have 70,000 people in the stadium, or, you know, events that are happening in a small town where the capacity of the local cell phone towers is not adequate for handling surges like that. So everybody's internet slows down. So people in the area, most with, let's say, Verizon and AT&T, would have had access to email, very slow loading web pages, but really not enough to do content creator work if you're trying to upload large photos or edit video and upload videos or podcasts or something like that. The download speeds were very slow, upload speeds even slower. So it was really only adequate for kind of emergency operations and communications. Some people had voice service but no data with their cell phones. I think US Cellular was one of those. Don't quote me on that. But some carriers only had phone service. And also for AT&T, there were areas where LTE would not be available. 4G was only available. So some apparent outages of towers. And that could be a matter of, you know, some of those towers having their own battery backup system that eventually failed for some of the equipment. So it worked for a while and then dropped out. But anyway, that was Monday afternoon for many people. No power and no high-speed internet and only phones to operate. Then for us, it was around 2:20 a.m. on Tuesday when the power came back on, and you hear, you know, the clicking and the beeping and all the noises of things powering back on, so it kind of wakes you up. And if you had lights on, those lights come back on. So at that point in the middle of the night, we kind of quickly went around, made sure everything was okay. The battery backup systems that ran for a short while and eventually had run out of power were starting to charge up again, which is good. We still did not have our normal high-speed internet, and we were running on the phones. We have an AT&T hotspot that is like a Wi-Fi hotspot, which is useful because it has an Ethernet connection. So instead of plugging into, you know, a MediaCom cable modem or a CenturyLink DSL modem, if those were not working, then by plugging the Ethernet into the AT&T hotspot, it's possible to get internet to all of the devices on your wired network. So if you have a lot of Ethernet connected devices, you can restore internet to all of those devices. And also, even, you know, home appliances and things that run through your network, that works. Now, here's a tip. Sorry to be a little bit rambling in this episode, but I'm just sort of sharing stream of consciousness, recalling the storm incidents. But something that really helped us is we've been using a Google Mesh network. And so if you have a Wi-Fi router plugged into the box from your internet service provider, then you have set up your own home Wi-Fi network. The reason that's helpful is that in an outage, you can plug your router from one device to another device and restore your internet, and you don't have to run around the house reprogramming everything to use a new Wi-Fi network name and password and all of that. And this is even handy when, quite frequently, you'll have a company like MediaCom will send out a new modem. They'll say, oh, we're replacing our old equipment. Here's the new modem. And if you're relying on the old modem as your Wi-Fi network, well, you're going to have to set up the new modem to be the same network name and password. Or maybe that's not convenient to be done, and so you're going to have to reprogram all your devices to connect to this other network. So it's really handy then to have a Google Wi-Fi setup or similar home network, because that way the network name stays the same, and whatever service provider you switch over to doesn't matter. Okay, so we were able to plug our Google Wi-Fi into the AT&T hotspot and restore our home Wi-Fi and all of the wired devices as well. And all the devices didn't know or care that we had switched over to another internet source. But here's the trick. In a normal outage, I guess there probably are no normal outages, but in a normal outage, if you're using the AT&T hotspot as a mobile hotspot, it would provide really good service. You might get 50 megabit per second download. So it would be adequate to replace, you know, a business or home internet service with. However, given all of the outages and given this huge shift of peak demand load over from cable and DSL companies like Mediacom and CenturyLink, suddenly hundreds of thousands of people were now using the cellular company internet bandwidth, which is really limited. The AT&T hotspot was still very, very slow and a little bit erratic. So on day one, even though things were kind of working, it was just spotty and not very reliable, and certainly not enough to get any heavy lifting types of data work done. The AT&T mobile hotspot has a battery in it, so it can be charged up and used even in a power outage, but you know, your other equipment needs power as well. So as long as we have some battery backup system or a generator, it works fine. But really, you know, heading into Monday afternoon, after we lost most of our power, we kind of gave up on the idea of having power for a little while and just worked with our phones and tried to keep those charged up. Then for Tuesday, after power was restored, then it was possible to have this AT&T mobile hotspot running most of the network, although slowly. We have access to CenturyLink Wi-Fi, and that's just included with where we live. And then when Mediacom works, which it usually does, that's our primary choice. So we have a few options. And in addition to that, we have Google Fi. That's different than the Google Wi-Fi hotspot mesh network that I was talking about earlier. Google Fi is a global Google mobile phone network. And that sounds like really high-tech, space age, and expensive. It's actually like the cheapest cell phone service you can get. It's like $20 or $25 for a phone, instead of most people are paying $200 a month. And then you pay for your data. It's $10 per gigabyte up to, I think it's 6 gigabytes. And then at that point, you've paid $60 and they consider it unlimited after that. So you only pay for what you use, but that's Google Fi. It's a growing network still. There are some areas where it works better than others, but that would be a fourth possible internet source for us. So either Google Fi, AT&T, using phones as a hotspot, or using an actual hotspot, CenturyLink, and Mediacom. And we were kind of monitoring those. So this was Tuesday. Power back, but still no internet, at least not high-speed internet. Then we were checking to see which service would come online first, CenturyLink or Mediacom. And on Tuesday, nothing really came back online. So we had the power, we were using the AT&T hotspot, plugging into the mesh network. Wednesday, yesterday in the morning, Mediacom came back online. Oh, and actually it was, yeah, late in the day Tuesday that CenturyLink came back online. Sorry, I'm just sort of piecing this together. So yeah, when we realized that CenturyLink was available as a Wi-Fi connection on Tuesday, and we had power, we were able to take an Apple laptop computer, connect with Wi-Fi to this available CenturyLink internet, And then in the Apple computer, going into system settings and under sharing, we chose internet sharing. So the Apple laptop computer knows, okay, I'm getting internet through Wi-Fi. We're sharing it. Probably it's going to be shared through Ethernet. So that was another solution during this outage that was helpful. So for a while, when we didn't have MediaCom, but we had power and we had CenturyLink, we were able to connect the laptop to the CenturyLink Wi-Fi, share that Wi-Fi connection through the Ethernet, and run an Ethernet cable over to this Google Mesh network. And then we had, at that point, higher speed internet. And there was no MediaCom, so we continued operating with that laptop and with CenturyLink. And then finally, on Wednesday in the morning, MediaCom was back. And what we do with that is just kind of keep an eye on the MediaCom modem. Sometimes it helps to unplug it and plug it in again, but usually you can just kind of keep an eye on that modem and you'll see the lights are blinking and trying to make a connection, but they're not. And you might see the modem sort of recycling, turning itself off and on, restarting. But eventually those lights go solid. And when we saw that the lights went solid Wednesday morning, then we plugged into the MediaCom cable modem and had service back. And that then pretty much brought us back to normal operations. For other people, what I've described is still underway, or they're still without power or without internet. They're at some point along that process. What's helpful to indicate is that we had electricity back sooner than we had internet. And part of the reason for that happening is that where there are downed electric lines, you're not going to have, you know, the cable TV guy going out at 2 a.m. trying to get somebody's, you know, Cartoon Network going again in the middle of, like, down power lines and such. The people who are qualified, equipped, trained, and have the equipment to clear out those high power lines, they need to go in first and repair the infrastructure that the internet's built on. So for most people, you're going to be without electricity. The electric will come back for a period of time. That gives an opportunity for these other providers to come in and fix what they need to fix. And maybe some of those systems just come back online as soon as the electricity is restored. But in other cases, additional work's needed. So I think in retrospect, as we look at this crisis, some things helped. For example, the coronavirus, COVID-19, global pandemic earlier in the year, in March, April, you know, people were stocking up on canned foods and things. There are a lot of shelf-stable, shelf-storable foods, and we still had some of those around. I mean, we have those anyway. We're not really big preppers, but it is nice to have a bit of extra stock so you don't have to go to the store every 2 days. And anyone who's a regular Costco shopper is kind of used to buying things in larger quantities. So there are some aspects of the COVID preparedness that helped with storm preparedness. This idea of the stay-at-home orders that went out earlier in the year, people were kind of set up to be hunkered down at home. That was helpful. We had some camping gear that was also helpful. I guess, you know, everybody has this kind of thing, but like little LED lanterns, extra equipment that you might use, like those little charging power packs that you use when you're camping. All of that kind of thing can be helpful. And we had some two-way radios that we bought for hiking in areas where there's no cell phone service. And we found those to be helpful because at one point when it seemed like not all of the AT&T towers were functional, we were able to stay in communication with each other and I was having to go and try to charge things up and whatever. So having this backup communication in place was helpful. And in this case, we didn't need to venture out. But if we did, that would have been important. Going forward, I think we probably wouldn't change too much. There are obviously the very simple snap your fingers obvious solutions, which would be, number one, purchase a $10,000 outdoor diesel generator and have it fueled and ready to run at a moment's notice. That's a solution, but of course that's not practical or affordable for most people, and it just doesn't make sense. If you have a storm go through every 5 years, you're not going to buy some $10,000 generator for a day or two that you're going to be without power. So we're not going to do that. Batteries are an option, but even they are expensive. To get a couple of really nice high capacity lithium ion batteries, it might be, you know, $1,000 to $1,500, and you'll need a charger and an inverter. Sometimes the higher quality units can cost, you know, $500, but you need some way to charge up that battery and then to convert the battery's DC voltage over into the AC voltage needed by home appliances. So you'd be looking at about $2,000 just for that setup. And again, if it's something that you're just using every 5 or 10 years, that's a pretty big expense. It's also an extra thing to have stored in the basement or the garage or whatever. For a little less money, a generator makes sense. And that's something that we might consider, especially as a support person, if I'm suddenly out of communication and without internet or without services for an extended period of time, lots of other people would be impacted. And that's part of the reason I've gone to the trouble that I have over the years to make sure that I have redundant systems, backup power systems, multiple methods to access the internet, is so that people who are more important than I am, who need help, can get that tech help. And some of that has come up over the past few days. There's one community in particular that I support of a couple hundred people, and there were some communications that needed to go out to assist with the needs there. And other people were having their businesses impacted by these outages. So I kind of had to be on and available helping in that way. So I can see that if we did have another storm go through, and they'll probably be more frequent, you know, as the ice caps continue to melt and temperatures exceed 120 degrees in areas, and the oceans are rising and climate is becoming more extreme and severe, I'm guessing we'll have more of these storms. So outages, more frequent outages, more extended outages are likely. And given that, I think it would be nice to have maybe a little generator and some extra gasoline to stay online for an extra few days or a week if needed. I'm surprised that local neighborhood associations, property homeowner associations, community centers, city government, county government, state government, we don't have areas that are available in emergencies that I know of. There's nothing that's like readily available. I know that sometimes schools are used that way, but it would be nice to have some place where people could go, where there would be these quiet generators and some power lines. People could charge up their phones and get some food if they need it, and first aid. And so I'm going to see what I can do to kind of promote that idea. I don't have any significant connections with local or state government, but I think if, you know, in the same way we have preparedness for other kinds of natural disasters, it would be nice to have some facilities in place. But that would be another reason to have people around town who, even if they don't have a loss of power, they would have these generators so they could go out and help others. And that would be something I've thought about, having maybe some extra generators so people who are without could have some electricity. And other than that, I don't foresee, you know, stocking up on 3 years of food or having, you know, thousands of gallons of fuel for off-the-grid encampment bunker fortress survivalist living. One thing you realize is that, let's say you are that person. I saw one of these people that had the generator, and they're like all dressed up in tactical gear, and they had their generator and their gas tanks and all this in a locked, the bed of their pickup truck had one of those kind of locked covers, so they were sort of guarding that, and I guess awaiting the apocalypse. So even if you are one of these super prepper preparedness survivalist people, and you've got yours, you know, you still can't function without everybody else. You know, like a person that thinks they're just going to save themselves without saving anyone else, that's not really a plan. And you realize that, you know, as I mentioned earlier, there are people who are trained and equipped and prepared to repair power lines. And there's other people that are trained and equipped and prepared to repair internet. And there are people that own and run the grocery stores that they have their strategies for saving food in refrigerated semi trucks if needed. And so, you know, everybody needs to be working together. And you can't sort of expect that the entire society is going to fall apart, but it's just going to be you in your remote protected bunker. There needs to be like a community-wide solution to problems. But that's all kind of above my pay grade. But anyway, yeah, I guess that's one thing I would consider, is either having some really high-capacity batteries for quiet and gasoline-free, pollution-free energy for a few days, or getting a very quiet generator. Those tend to be fairly clean in terms of how they run, I'm told, especially the inverter models that can adjust their fuel usage up and down based on the load. So if you're just charging up some cell phones or laptop computer, it's going to be running a lot quieter, using less fuel, than if you have to plug in some appliance that uses a lot more electricity. But anyway, I wanted to share this sort of as a podcast episode recounting what it was like to go through the storm, how it impacted us, what were some of the tools that we used to stay online. I think in my situation, being a tech support person, maybe I had access to some more resources, and part of that driven by the fact that I knew I wanted to keep providing support to people that needed it. I maybe there are people that would be fine on their own, just, you know, going a day or two without electricity, without internet, but I feel nervous about that because I have people that rely on me. So anyway, but yeah, I just wanted to share in this episode that experience, what tools we used, what we might do differently in the future. And at the start of the episode, I was wanting to just share some tips for those who are still struggling through this. And, you know, this storm came through days after the tragedy in Lebanon, in Beirut, the explosion there. And if you followed that news story, you saw that there was a blast that resulted because of 5.5 million pounds of explosives being left in a storage area for years without proper attention. And so anyway, like 300,000 people were without homes, and this blast zone just went miles. So if you were kind of following that story, and then this tragedy hits Iowa, you'd notice that there's some downed trees and your power goes out for a day or something. And I know others are still suffering through this, but it was like, by contrast, I think, you know, you look at what's happening in some of the other areas in the world, and it certainly isn't acceptable or something that we would want anyone to have to deal with, but it seems like it's becoming the norm. Natural disasters, human error disasters, and we're needing to be more resilient. There's been discussion of how COVID has practically shut down our economy, some people are saying, or the economies of some countries. And one person was responding saying, you know, that's an indication that our economy is not as resilient as it should be, and our society isn't as resilient as it should be. So there are some countries that, because of their management, they were able to get over the coronavirus, like New Zealand, let's say, get to the point of having no cases. And I think it took them about 7 weeks. Now it's been 100 days, I think, that they haven't had any cases. So there are things that a person can do. And then there is, you know, less organized, less effective approaches. There are these less effective approaches, and perhaps what one might say is poor oversight and management that leads to, instead of, you know, no cases at all, where you have a situation where there are millions of cases and looking at possibly, you know, 200,000 people dying in the United States. So similarly, I guess we can look at things like natural disasters and look for ways that we can be more effective at preparing with, dealing with these types of things. And that's something to be mindful of. So for those who are still without electricity, who've lost their food, who don't have air conditioning, and feel like they don't really have a comfortable place to be living, I'm, you know, thinking about that and hoping that people can get to hotels or get to friends and family. We've had some ice storms before in Iowa, and, you know, over 100,000 people without electricity in the winter. So that means you're going without heat at a really cold time of year. That kind of thing makes a crisis even worse. So for those who've been through this recent storm, that's something to think about. You know, while your mind is on this and you have the time to be preparing, think about, what would you do to better prepare for this kind of disruption in the future? And if it happens at a time when it's 100 degrees out and you need air conditioning or fans, or if it happens at a time when there are 20 below temperatures outside and high winds and you don't have heat, how would you provide yourself with the heat you need? And if you're in a home and there's a storm and it's raining and the power goes out and your sump pump that normally would be keeping your basement dry is no longer working, maybe you had it on battery backup and it worked for an hour, but now it's been 5 hours. You know, how are you going to keep your home warm or cool as needed and dry? There's so many scenarios at different times of year where that could be really necessary. And so we have the time and the attention right now to give focus and prepare for the next outage, disruption, crisis. And so that's why I wanted to take time in this episode to talk about it. I know there may be people who are listening to this a week from now, a month from now, a year from now, long after the the storm has ended and the recovery is completed. But hopefully, if you've listened to this episode, it can inspire you to think about how to better prepare for different kinds of disasters. And if you're in the midst of one, how to have a strategy for making it through and doing what you need to do to move forward. Well, thanks for listening. I appreciate everybody who follows the podcast and those who listen and comment and click like and share it. So appreciate that a lot. And I look forward to sharing more with you again soon. Take care.